Georgia's the new hotbed for musical talent, and the music industry knows it. Record executives are turning their eyes to the Peach State to discover the next big thing. On GPB's Peach Jam podcast, you'll hear those rising Georgia artists before anyone else. Listen and discover the sound of what's next on the Peach Jam podcast from Georgia Public Broadcasting.
Hello and welcome to the Georgia Today podcast from GPB News. Today is Thursday, February 29th. I'm Orlando Montoya. On today's episode, today is crossover day at the state capitol. We'll look at what that means for pending legislation before lawmakers. A bill to allow an opioid-reversing drug in schools is moving forward after passage in the Senate. And a new book promises to shake up our understanding of the founder of Georgia. We'll talk to the author. These stories and more are coming up on this edition of Georgia Today. Georgia lawmakers face a key deadline to pass bills today. Several closely watched measures, including legislation on immigration and religious liberty, are still in doubt. GPB's Donna Lowry explains it's crossover day at the General Assembly, when bills have to pass either the House or the Senate in order to cross over to the other chamber for more debate.
It's the end of a biennium session when bills have a two-year shelf life, essentially. Any bills that don't make it would have to be reintroduced next session. So, of course, there's some legislation that can make it in. It can be tagged on to something else. But for the most part, if it doesn't pass in either the Senate or the House, then it doesn't have a chance of being a bill. And I should say, the legislative day doesn't necessarily end at midnight. It can end when the legislature decides.
Tune into GPB TV or GPB.org tonight at 7 for a special one-hour crossover day episode of GPB's Lawmakers. One bill that did make it through on crossover day as of this recording is a measure in the Senate allowing opioid overdose reversal medication in schools. GPB's Ellen Eldridge reports the bill passed unanimously and now heads to the state Senate.
Senate Bill 395 allows teachers, administrators, visitors, and anyone in public school buildings to carry naloxone. Currently, only a school nurse can stock or administer the medication. It's designed to stop an opioid overdose. Bill sponsor Senator Clint Dixon, who lost a family member to an overdose, says even bystanders can feel comfortable aiding in a suspected overdose situation, like at a school.
There's no known side effects to the drug. Also, if it's administered and you're not having an overdose from fentanyl, there's no known side effects from it.
Dixon says grants are available to help schools pay for naloxone nasal spray. For GPB News, I'm Ellen Eldridge.
Georgia Democrats are hoping to pass legislation protecting in vitro fertilization, or IVF, after an Alabama Supreme Court decision that threatens the legality of the infertility treatment. GPB's Sarah Callis has the latest.
Senator Elena Parent filed two bills in the Senate. One aims to protect IVF by specifying that an embryo outside the uterus is not legally considered a child. The other seeks to codify the right to contraception.
Georgians have the right to health care, to reproductive health care, and to contraception and family planning tools. And any restriction on this access is dangerous because it prevents people from making choices that affect their physical, mental, economic health, and well-being.
The bills are unlikely to pass this session. Georgia's current abortion law, outlawing abortion at about 6 weeks into pregnancy, does not create a definition of personhood that would jeopardize the legality of IVF or contraception. For GPB News, I'm Sarah Callis at the State Capitol.
Governor Brian Kemp has signed a record nearly $38 billion fiscal 2024 mid-year budget. The spending plan signed today includes $5 billion in new spending and draws on an unprecedented $16 billion budget surplus. For the first time in memory, it pays for major capital projects using cash instead of bond financing. With the mid-year budget now behind lawmakers, they'll next tackle Kemp's $36 billion fiscal 2025 budget. The director of the Georgia Economic Forecasting Center says the state will experience an economic slowdown, but no recession this year. Director Rajiv Dhawan of Georgia State University presented the center's semiannual economic forecast yesterday. In it, he predicted Georgia will add 37,000 jobs in 2024, less than half the number of jobs added last year.
The economy is weaker than we think it is, because I look at the lead predictor of growth down the road, business investment.
He says he expects Fed rate cuts to spur investment going into 2025. The Georgia forecast is largely consistent with national trends. Today is February 29th, a day that comes around only once every 4 years. And since Leap Year Day 2024 falls on a Thursday, that means an extra day of work. Now, that's good news for hourly workers, but for those on an annual salary, that could feel like working an extra day without pay. Candace Jackson is a partner in the Atlanta-based accounting firm Moore Colson. She says business owners should account for leap year when analyzing revenue.
Companies need to be careful when looking at comparative February financial statements year over year, because this February may look better than last February, but again, you know, it may just be that small incremental additional day of production.
Leap year day accounts for just one of 91 days in the first quarter of 2024, meaning that its impact in theory is about 1%. The Wall Street Journal reports that few companies even mention it in their financial disclosures.
General James Oglethorpe is a name Georgians should know. He founded the British colony of Georgia in 1733. And there's no shortage of books written about him, but a new book promises to shake up our understanding of the man. It's written by another Georgia history maker, former Georgia Labor Commissioner and current CEO of DeKalb County, Michael Thurman. He joins me now to talk about his book, James Oglethorpe, Father of Georgia, A Founder's Journey from Slave Trader to Abolitionist. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for the invitation, Orlando. I am honored to be here.
You write that this book has been a long time coming for you, and that its central ideas go back to your interest in the Georgia founder. This started with a trip you took back in 1996 to his burial site in England. What did you see at Oglethorpe's final resting place that started this 20-plus year journey of discovery for you?
General Oglethorpe and his wife Elizabeth are entombed beneath the floor of the parish church of All Saints in the village of Cranham, about 19 miles northeast of London. And there is a large white marble plaque, and it simply stated, "He was the friend of the oppressed Negro."
Many people know that Oglethorpe banned slavery in Georgia. That's a critical part of this story, isn't it?
Absolutely. He was one of 21 original Georgia trustees, and they prohibited the importation of enslaved Africans and enslaved black people into the colony of Georgia because they felt that it would have an extremely negative impact and undermine their ability to help poor, impoverished, unemployed Europeans find economic security in the New World. The prevailing narrative is that slavery was prohibited to protect the safety and the morals of white colonists, with very little concern, if any, for enslaved blacks.
And your book sort of challenges that notion and seeks to revise that to put more emphasis on his abolition. Why do you think those explanations and revisions are needed?
I think it's important to complete his legacy and to help future generations of Georgians fully appreciate and understand his humanistic views, his legacy, and his lifelong opposition to slavery. At first, he was an anti-slavery advocate, but later in life became an abolitionist.
At first, he was not only just, I mean, how do I put this? He was sort of indifferent, would you say, in his early career, sort of indifferent to the matter of slavery?
That's an excellent way to describe it. Oglethorpe briefly served as the deputy governor of the Royal African Company, established for the express purpose of exploiting the West African slave trade, captured and then transported almost 300,000 Africans to the Americas. So this was a principal slave trading firm. He briefly served as a deputy governor. The first formerly enslaved black man that came into Oglethorpe's life was Yarbu Suleiman Diallo, who was a young African Muslim captured, enslaved, transported to the Maryland colony. Diallo was educated, came from a wealthy family in what is now modern-day Senegal. After a failed escape attempt from a tobacco plantation, Diallo's enslaver allowed him to write a letter. The letter is written in Arabic. In the most improbable set of circumstances, number one, the enslaver allowed him to write the letter, but number two, it traveled 4,000 miles, passed through the hands of several white enslavers who worked for the Royal African Company, and ultimately fell into possession of James Oglethorpe. Oglethorpe sent the letter to Oxford University, had it interpreted. He was so affected by the contents of the letter that he arranged for Diallo's freedom, passage from Maryland to England, where he was ultimately manumitted and set free. After Oglethorpe read the letter that talked about, number one, his piety towards the religion of Islam, love for his family, and the fact that he was literate is what triggered Oglethorpe's journey from slave trader to abolitionist. Shortly after reading the letter, he resigned from the Royal African Company, severed all ties, and began this amazing lifelong journey, the awareness to an anti-slavery position.
His views were radicalized, you could say, or his views became more zealous when he came back to England. Can you talk about his later in life anti-slavery zeal?
Well, he never forgave those pro-slavery colonists that basically wanted to bring slaves into Georgia and did everything they could. Oglethorpe was the only trustee to actually live in Georgia. And the pro-slavery colonists, known as malcontents, knew that the only way to reach or create legalized slavery in Georgia was to destroy Oglethorpe's authority and his reputation. And they actually executed not just a political campaign, but also a smear campaign against Oglethorpe regarding his views against the enslavement of black people. Oglethorpe never forgave them for that. And he lambasted these individuals and never forgave them for being what he considered to be people of low esteem and self-respect.
As a lot of people ask this question with when it's regard to monuments or names of streets or any types of things like this, how does this make people better today?
As Georgians, I believe we have much to be proud of. I believe that Oglethorpe's legacy is something that should be not just celebrated, but emulated. The fact that he could bridge the gaps between race and color and religion and legal status, that he embraced a humanistic view. He was one of the great, one of the first human rights advocates that we know about in Western civilization. So we have much to be proud of. I think the original vision of Georgia should be our North Star. And if we can learn from Oglethorpe's journey that you can change yourself, and if you can change and evolve and improve yourself, that will leverage and put you in a position where you can evolve and improve all of mankind. Oglethorpe changed the world because he was able to change himself.
The book is called James Oglethorpe, Father of Georgia, A Founder's Journey from Slave Trader to Abolitionist by Michael Thurmond, who is a former Georgia Labor Commissioner and the current CEO of DeKalb County. It was a pleasure having you here.
I am so honored to have been given this opportunity.
In sports news, Columbus is spending $50 million to upgrade its 1920s baseball stadium to attract a minor league team, the AA Braves. City Council members this week approved the upgrades to the stadium, Golden Park, in a 6-4 vote. Mayor Skip Henderson characterized the baseball venture as an investment for economic development. Shay Gwynn, an executive with the team's owner, Diamond Baseball Holdings, said hiring in Columbus will begin soon.
We are beyond excited about it. We believe in the town. We believe in the city. We believe in the project. We absolutely believe it's going to be successful.
Some council members expressed concerns about the city's ability to pay for the upgrades without raising taxes. Opening day for the new team is in April 2025. And that's it for today's edition of Georgia Today. News is an ever-changing business, of course, so for all the latest on these stories and more, you can check out our website, gpb.org/news. We'd love for you to hit subscribe on this podcast. That helps you to keep us current in your feed. And if you have feedback, send that to us at georgiatoday@gpb.org. We'd love to hear from you. I'm Orlando Montoya, filling in for Peter Biello for a few days. I'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.